is an interview with Art Clark of La Grande, Oregon, on December 6th, 1997.
Maybe if I can maybe just go through just a little basic information of when you're born, your place of birth, and then in relationship, just a brief history of your residence here within Union County and background and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was born February 2nd, 1934 in La Grande.
And you lived here all your life?
Lived here all the time, huh? I believe I was born down on Birch, North Birch. And then we moved on up just a short distance from there upon Y, then back down onto Z Avenue, and then about 1942, 43, 44, somewhere along in there, we moved to on the corner right here, and then I got married after that, and we lived three or four places, and then I built a couple of houses, and this is the second one we built here.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what about as far as after school, high school there, or schooling days, as far as your occupation? And
I quit school in my junior year and started working in a sawmill.
Which one was that?
Marvin and Jim Quidwell.
Oh, whereabouts was that?
Okay, the only way I can explain it to you, are you familiar with what we call Peebler Hill, or used to call Peebler Hill?
No.
Going up past, when you get up the rest area, going up the highway here, mm-hmm. at Bald Hill on the right-hand side.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You come back around in towards George Simona Street, familiar where he lives in there?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lane went up there, and then it just wound up around the hill and got up on top. And there was a mill up there that they had. And they, I believe they acquired that from, it'll come to me here in a minute. Oh, dear. Emil Meilenberg and another fellow by the name of Green. Meilenberg lives on Pierce Lane, or used to. He's dead now. And Green lived over on by DeLong's on that road that comes from the airport that goes up there on east and west. You familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think
right off the freeway there by the truck stop.
Across
the tracks and go down.
Oh, yeah, okay. But do you know about what the capacity was up there and what they were cutting?
We didn't cut any white fir, and they didn't want to cut anything except red fir and pine, but basically pine's what they were after mm-hmm. at that time.
Yeah, it's still pretty much the market.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember about what year that would have been?
51.
52. Uh-huh. Yeah, because, of course, what we ran into with the forest there, the white fir is still weed species at that time. You couldn't give it away.
That's right. Yeah.
It was in the 60s, right. Therefore, I actually developed a market for the chips.
That's right.
And that. Mm-hmm. Just go for $1 to $1,000 just to try to move it.
Yeah, just to get rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember about how long that mill was in there?
It was there after they. Well, no, wait. They moved the mill from there down to Lone Pine, just across the tracks there. I think there's a sawmill in there again right now.
Well, there's a pole. They're making poles down there.
Yeah.
Right
okay.
Now,
uh-huh.
On that airport road.
That's where they moved it to, and I imagine it was there for 51 and 52 when Marvin and Jim had it and were running. Marvin's still alive, and he's probably a real good source of information.
Oh.
Do you know Marvin Twidwell?
No, I know. I've heard the name, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he lives, you can find him real easy if you wanted to.
Do you remember about what the capacity was of the mill, of how much they're cutting a day or annually?
I'm going to guesstimate if they had a good day, they'd get 10,000, perhaps more.
And was that just lumber that they're cutting?
Rough lumber, and then they shipped it out hauled it out on truck, and I think it may have went to Elgin at that time to a planer mill over there.
And how long did you work there?
Oh, off and on for two and a half years. In the wintertime, they didn't work too much there. And then after somewhere along in that period of time, I went to work for Jack Eckstein on Fox Hill. Do you remember where that was?
No, I'm not familiar with that one at all.
Okay. Well, Jack Eckstein had a real good mill, and I think that fellow must have cut He cut everything, though. He cut even the white fir and the spruce and everything. And it all was sold to the Adventist Church in Pendleton. Harris Pine Mill, I believe they called it.
Yeah.
Everything he cut was into 5/4 and 6/4 lumber. A real efficient mill, a good one.
Was it way down on the hill, was it?
No, it's when you go up the hill about 5 miles, you get it where the roads fork. And you got that new smooth one going around to go up Mount Emily, or are you still
there? No, I haven't been up there at all.
You haven't been up there?
No.
Heck, I'd be happy to take you up there some of these times. I'll show you 2 or 3 more up there.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a bunch of mills around, you know, something.
Oh, yeah, anywhere.
Some of the old publications like that, in just the Elgin country alone, like 35 mills, around the turn of the century.
I was amazed what you told me was up there in this area. Didn't you say there was 250 in that?
I think all together, over the years, that of course a lot of them, they wouldn't last too long, but then they'd be bought out and names changed and, and like that. And so there's a slug of them when they start looking back in about 18, well, I think. Oradell was the first mill in 1862 when, right there, the foot of Fox Hill, when they put the mill in there.
Are you familiar with Fox? Fox had a mill on Fox Hill?
Yeah, that was the one.
That's
the
up on
original.
Top. That's on top.
Oh, was there on that one on top? Because originally there was one right at the mouth of the canyon. They might have moved that.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe that you're referring to the mouth of the canyon. Are you talking about going up above the dump?
No, right there on the Grand Ronde River.
Right on the river?
Yeah, that's the original one where they first came in, and I think it's 1862, if I remember.
I wasn't aware of that one.
I had a picture picked up at the college, showed a dam in there, and I think that might have been for electricity, when they first started, because that was, I think, 1906 or somewhere around there when that picture was taken. But the original information I could find is that it was about, the first sawmill that was put into the valley. Then another one, Somerville, was about the same time, 63, yeah. I think, yeah. Right in there, where, people started moving in. They needed lumber for their houses.
Food and lumber.
Oh, yeah. That and heat and cordwood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you betcha.
Fences and that.
Well, right on top of the hill there, when you get up on top of the hill, just back into timber, half a mile. And I can still remember seeing parts of buildings and aluminum and metal siding and stuff, maybe part of a burner or something there. And the other day at work, I asked Gary Keller, he has a cabin up on Fox Hill there, right below the old Eckstein Mill, that who that was. And he said, that was Fox.
Oh,
he had that sawmill up there. And then it kind of rung a bell with me, and I kind of remembered part of it then.
But then after you left the Fox Hill Mill, then... is that when you went to Mount Emily, or?
No, I went to Baker, worked at the Baker Lumber Company, and then I worked for Ray McFarland when he had his mill down underneath below the dump hill there, just above the fairgrounds. And April the 28th, 1955 is when I went to work for Mount Emily.
And what was your job there?
Well, I pulled on the slick chain. That was my starting job. Then went to car loading, and eventually through the years, I've done everything in the planer department.
Oh, yeah. So you've been in the mill then? In the
planer.
In the woods, yeah.
There was other places I worked. Albert, I just remembered a couple more. I worked for Ramsey and Shadwick, had a mill farther up above Fox Hill, up towards Mount Emily, the top of Mount Emily. Mike Ness had a mill up there. And then Mike Ness moved his mill down by the, used to be right behind Valley Sausage.
Oh, yeah.
Or River Products, it was.
River Products.
I worked for him. Mm-hmm. And it was easy to get a job in those days because there was lots of employment back then,
Or were you going trucking most of that lumber out to planers?
Yeah.
Just cutting it around?
That's, shipping it out. I don't remember where Mike sent his lumber to, but. I think it went to Pendleton and Elgin.
Yeah.
Seemed like the planer mill in Elgin might have been a Calder. Does that sound familiar to you?
Sounds familiar.
Calder. I think they had just a planer mill set up there buying timber.
I'd like to maybe, Art, if we could go through a few things here, starting with Grand Ronde River system. If you recall, just vegetative types and conditions, especially from Hillgard to Oradell along, you know, along the river area, there are changes that you can remember over, you know, your experience going up and down the river there.
It's nearly all gone. Really, what it was, I can't remember the dam at Perry, but I can remember the footings and stuff from the dam.
Well, I think the dam was either, of course, see, they shut that sawmill down in 1926, and they had a picture in the LeGrand history that John Turner and Dick Hermans.
Yeah, I got that book.
And that one, they had on their date of the early 1930s of where they blew the dam, but I don't know, you know, I've never seen anything else of whether it was then or even, you know, maybe before, but they ran that, I know, up to 26 when they took the sawmill over to Pondosa. That's how they just picked up.
I remember reading about those things that occurred then. Dad told me that he rode his bicycle up the river to watch him blow the dam. Said it was the most disappointing thing he ever saw in his life. Said just a little tiny hole and a spurt of water went in the air.
Yeah, that was the picture.
And then about 30 years later, I see a picture in that book you're referring to, Hermans and Turner. Yeah.
Do you remember, have any idea about when that might have been that your dad thought when, you know, when he would have gone up there to see that?
It's going to be right close to 1925 is all I can say somewhere. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Dad was born in 1913. Would he been 1926, 1927, 1928, somewhere along there. I would guess because he never did really tell me, but he said he rode his bicycle up there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
That's what I was wondering about when I saw the 1930s of why it would have, you know, waited that long to blow it, you know, after everything was shut down in 1926. You know, that's what was... you know, seemed like they wouldn't have waited that long.
No, I don't think they would have either, personally.
Uh-huh. There wasn't any particular reason to, you know, hang on to it there.
No use for it at all then, was there?
No. And of course, your highway was going up through there at that time, too.
Well, the highway is what destroyed the river, or whatever you want to call about it. You know, they had to, and the railroad and stuff like that. I can remember what it was like. I can remember going up on the old highway and above Perry and driving around the hill and getting out and walk down over the hill and getting on a cable and going across to that cabin. You sit across from Peach Cabin over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that cabin may have been owned by one of our English teachers and our social teachers in junior high school, a Tickleback or a Snyder or something like that. I don't recall who really owned it. I remember hearing that.
You recall part of the vegetation, what was up through there in the early days, or any change from, you know, what there is now?
As far as being able to remember what kind of vegetation that was, I couldn't say for sure, but there was lots of cottonwood. Mm-hmm. And there was lots of brush and stuff.
Were the cottonwood pretty much mature trees, large trees? Or?
I don't know. I don't think they were large as I can remember. Some of them may have been in the 2 or 3 foot stage, but it seemed like most of them were down to bigger than a beaver is going to chop down. Not though, because the whole Grand Ronde River all down through here used to be cottonwoods all the way through there.
Yeah, because you still see quite a lot of remnants there, you know, down below the fairgrounds. There's quite a few stands in there. Yeah. Of course, there's still a lot up.
That's about the sizes I remembered, except I do know that there were some huge ones in there. There had to have been, but I couldn't say definitely how much any of them were. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lots of brush, lots of birds. Lots of everything.
Yeah. What type of brush was the, do you recall what was in there for brush?
You know, I'm thinking that we had a vine type stuff. I remember trying to smoke it. We did. We called it dogwood. No, it was horrible taste and stuff. And rose, lots of rose bushes, as I remember, because I can remember the rose hips.
Oh, yeah.
Lots and lots of that kind of stuff. Everywhere throughout the river system. Mm-hmm. It seemed like that was still there. As far as willows go, golly, I don't remember too much about willows and stuff. Mostly cottonwood.
Mostly cottonwood and some of the other rose and that type of thing.
And then up through the river, we had the firs and a few pine trees and stuff growing right down into the edge of the river.
Did you get up into or remember any beaver along that stretch in there? Any beaver activity?
Yep. I remember beaver activity everywhere I went in the Grand Ronde River, any of the creeks. all the way clear on down through the valley, down into the big ditch. Even there was beavers. Mm-hmm. If you were down there fishing, you'd see them swimming, or you'd see where trees had been fallen, and all the little sticks that washed down above, or they'd settle down through the valley. There must have been a lot of beaver up here, because there were little limbs everywhere with the bark chewed off of them.
About when was, what years were that, or what periods do you call
them? Oh, I'd say it was from '47 to '57. I don't even remember when they straightened the river out, made that channel down in there.
Well, the state ditch portion of it was 1870. That was long before our time.
Oh yeah, way down below.
Way down below.
Yeah.
But even a lot of the other, from what I gathered, when the railroad went in 1884, they straightened a lot of that to keep it from flooding the depot from here towards Island City. And then a little later on, they went down and hit it between there and the state ditch. So all that's been worked over. Get on aerial photographs. Yeah. You can
and
see.
More than that, more than one time. Mm-hmm. As I remember, it was, I'll say 40 years ago, they went through here and straightened this all out, channeled out down through here, because it was washing out all the high banks and stuff that used to be in there and stuff. I don't remember what year that was, but even at that period of time, we could go down to the river and dive off of a bank 2 feet above the river in the summertime and swim in those holes. Now you dive out there, you better go way out there, because it's about 20 or 30 feet down the river.
Outside your head.
They mined a lot of rock out of there.
They did all through this area in here, through town. Mm-hmm. Do you remember who that was, who would have been doing that? Because I think now the only thing they take is pretty much down on the city, don't they?
Yes.
You got the big plants down there.
The one that I worked at was at the end of 3rd or 4th Street, and it was owned by Ed and Jack Hart.
Do you remember about what year that would have been?
Oh, let's see. Mm-hmm. 52? I worked for him for a couple of weeks there one time. They had a rock crusher and set up there and everything right on the river. I'm thinking it might have been 4th Street is what I'm thinking it might have been.
Yeah, but right in that area there. Do you remember as far as what they're doing with all that rock?
No, I do not know. I don't know. There is a person that wouldn't know exactly. He worked there. He was a few years older than I am, the J. Bess.
Do you recall, Art, of any other obstacles? Of course, you know, there's the Perry Dam was gone, you know, before your time, but were there any other things, dams or other obstructions in the river that you can recall up to the Grand Ronde or other places you fished?
Man-made
barriers?
I don't, at the moment, I'd have to say right now I don't recall of any. Mm-hmm. That was even before they were dredging it out for the irrigation canals, you know, going down through there. So I don't recall of any other barriers.
What about out in the valley itself? You'd mentioned a little bit about, you know, there's cottonwood going out towards the state ditch along the Grand Ronde. Mm-hmm. Was that pretty solid with trees all the way through, or was it pretty spotty?
Trees everywhere except where somebody had a pasture or some kind of development going on. Yes, there was trees all the way. Of course, now what I'm referring to is the old river channels that went through there before they straightened it out, where all the main parts of the cottonwood, the last time they straightened it out, was basically on the old river channels. Mm-hmm. That's where it really grew the most, because the new ones had never had time to get established anything there yet. But,
right.
Mm-hmm. But before they straightened out the last time, to where it's the same channel it is now, there was trees clear at the water line everywhere. Oh heck yeah, all the time.
Now, do you recall about the last time when they straightened, when that last straightening was done?
I would say 19 60.
Because
the flood, '65 was a horrible flood.
The horrible flood was as the December '64, of course, lasted into '65.
Yeah,
that was the real high water in there. It took the bridge out, Spring Street and Island City.
You know, I was standing looking at that bridge and said, "It'll never wash that out." And I turned around, talked to Walt Lovely, and looked back up there, and it was laying in the river. I missed it. Oh, and that length of time, I was standing there when Walt Lovely's house was getting ready to wash out down the river.
Yeah.
I think you may have asked me another question, and I probably interrupted you. I'm bad about interrupting or not listening.
Oh, that's no problem. Well, mainly it's just the straightening of that.
What we were referring to, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was thinking it was before 1965 that they had been in there with cats and stuff and was dredging it up, but perhaps it wasn't. Perhaps that was the year that they, after the flood, maybe that's when they went ahead, Corps engineers, whoever did that.
Yeah, a lot of times it seems like that's what triggers the only action, and when they have a big flood, then they'll go in and try to do the work.
Well, I could see at that point in time, I thought I could see why it was necessary, because it was really taking out lots of bank. Excuse me a minute. Where were we?
Well, just the as far as the straightening that river out, of how much work they did down through there. Like I said, it might have been right after that flood there in '65.
Mm-hmm. Above Riverside Park, there used to be huge high banks, big clay banks. I call them clay. Perhaps they weren't good, probably good farm ground. Mm-hmm. Silt, coming down for how many ever years. They were too high for me to jump off of, to jump in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And then on down through this area here, below Riverside Park, and there was washing out some big, huge, removing fields and stuff. So I could see why they probably thought it was necessary to do it. And I kind of agree. I'd like to see it be running all of its channels, but
mm-hmm.
be something to see. I would love to see a picture, an aerial picture of this valley before they dug everything up. Because everywhere you look out there, you see these cottonwood trees, and it's part of the Grand Ronde River or Cat.
Well, that's it. Looking at aerial photos, you can start tracing a lot of those, even though they've taken, a lot of places they've taken the trees out of there, but you still see the old channels.
Like most of them, they're gone, but you can still see where God, it really wound around out through there.
Well, even in... Corps of Engineers flew in February 1970 after the high water that winter, and it shows a lot of those where those old channels flooded back in again. You could see the water standing there.
It still tries to go there, too.
Oh, yeah, it does. It's still the low spot, so when you get the high water, it will go in.
Yeah, when you can see, I want to say that I don't remember a barrier, but I want to. Bear with me a moment here. We'll go to the Riverside Park, and right down below there, we'll say quarter of a mile or less than that. They got that ditch. They take the water out, and it comes in there right now. Right below the park bridge, it comes around here, ditch.
Yeah.
And right below there, which would be out on May Lane over here, there's another little slew of water that came out, and it ran down and went to clear on through down into Flour Mill at Island City.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they had some kind of
diversion
in there,
takeoff in there,
because Augie Stang had a pump house that was built out over that canal to come off the river, and then they pumped it in and ran into Mill Pond over here. Plus there was a ditch coming through from up here by Fordell Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember exactly where it came in. I had to come down right down X Avenue here and run into Mill Pond.
Oh yeah, to feed the pond there.
Yeah.
As far as fishing, do you recall both, the Grand Ronde or Cat's Creek, any places that you fished of the runs, of salmon or other species or eels and that?
Oh, yeah. Things you don't even see anymore is eels. Used to be in the irrigation ditch. You could go down to the river anywhere and pick up little tiny ones, and then there was great big huge ones about a foot and a half long or so. Lamprey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, I can remember standing on the old pilings. The first time I saw salmon in the Catherine Creek, or Grand Ronde River, I didn't realize what it was, but as I was standing on those old pilings for that dam, a log laying there, and I saw a tail and a fish move out in there. At that time, I just knew it was a big fish, but now I know what it was. It was a Chinook salmon. There was four or five of them laying in there, and then when you get up on the river, you'd see them and stuff.
Yeah. Was that up on Perry? You mentioned right?
Yeah, the Perry Dam.
Yeah, okay.
That was the first time I ever saw one there.
Yeah, remember about what year that would have been?
Oh, it probably 48. maybe even 46. I've just
but about that time in the middle 40s.
Just learning to swim and being able to sneak away to get to the river.
Do you recall like how many salmon were going up the river at that time?
On the Grand Ronde River, I'm not familiar with how many went up. I never was up there enough to know that much about what was up in the headwaters of it. But on Catherine Creek, everywhere I went on Catherine Creek, it was full of salmon. I remember my grandmother said, "Oh, that isn't a lot of salmon. You should have saw it when I was younger." Mm-hmm. I can imagine, because it was salmon everywhere. Lots of them.
What part of Catherine Creek was that, Art?
From just above Union, right all the way up through there. But when you get up in the areas of the parks and up through there and stuff, that's where we saw most of the fish, because it seemed like that's where the family liked to go have a picnic, up on Catherine Creek.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think part of the reason Dad and Grandpa and Grandma liked to go up there is because they used to take the buckboard when they lived at Cricket Flat, put their cook stove on, and go over and camp right below the lower park. There's a bluff in there, a little bit of a turnout.
Oh, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. They'd camp there, and then they'd go out and gig salmon and can them, stay there for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember about what year that would have been? When
I don't have the idea what year it may have been. Maybe even in the 30s.
But around the 30s?
Yeah, I would, and sooner.
Maybe 20s and 30s?
My granddad, Grandpa and Grandma Clark were homesteaders at North Powder.
Oh, yeah.
Oops. I had a picture a while ago. I was looking at that isn't it. The old homestead. You'd look at the truck and then you tell me what year it was.
No,
see, they were taking a buckboard when they were going camping out, so it would have been more than the 30s, I'm sure of that. Mm-hmm. I said a buckboard, that's how I remember Dad telling me they'd go and camp.
That was their mode of transportation at that time. Yeah.
Take all day to get from Union or Elgin to Union, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I've been up on the Minor River a couple of times. Saw salmon just like I did on Catherine Creek. Everywhere you'd look, you'd see salmon. The Lostine River, the Imanaha, all those. And even in later years when people didn't think there was any salmon, in the 60s, going up the Grand Ronde River. By then, I was going up in Tony Bays and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You'd get up in those holes and sneak along and look and pay attention. There was salmon in all the holes.
That was in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember about what time of year that would have been?
In midsummer. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were starting to... Well, we've camped out earlier, picnicked earlier than that, so a lot of them were in good shape, but most of the time, like it was in August, they might be starting to get little white spots on them and stuff. They get pretty close to spawning time, I'd imagine. Mm-hmm. After the water would go down, they'd get up in there, it'd be the middle of June would probably be about the end of a run. So, July and August, that would be the time that I think that I saw them.
Do you recall over the years of changing, like, water levels, of whether there's anything, significant as far as, of course that changes year for year or something. But
it sure does.
Whether there's any major trend at all compared to, for what you can remember.
I don't think I remember any difference in the waters. Mm-hmm. I really don't, I had to have different types of water to look at. When I was a kid, most of my life was young, real young, was down in the lower river here. It was kind of almost like a one pool after another, good salmon water.
Yeah.
But as far as I can recall, thinking about what was up the river and stuff, for an average, I think we still got the same amount of water. Mm-hmm. I don't know that to be a fact, but I've always felt that way.
Do you remember when you're going up there on the upper Grand Ronde as far as beaver activity up above Hillgard for, either the dams or seeing beaver in there?
I've seen beavers, yes, all the way up through there. My most favorite place to watch beavers is up on Five Points Creek. Used to go up, hike back in, walk up Fox Hill, go back in and fish back down to Hillgard. There were lots of beaver dams and stuff. It's Prisontine, if that's the right word. I'll bet there's still beaver in there.
going out there working right now, right behind the schoolhouse this last year.
There's really?
Yeah, they're just dropped a bunch of trees, and that high water came through and took them all out. And
oh, yeah.
Back in there, eat down a chew out of it. Yeah, they fell quite a few cottonwoods in there.
They do that.
But that was this last spring and summer.
Yeah.
I got some pictures. I never did see the beaver, but they're sure working the trees.
Well, they can be secretive.
Oh, yeah. I spent quite a bit of time, be lucky.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you recall Art on the towards the upper Grand Round above Kelgard, you know, going on up as far as wetland marshes or, you know, changes over the years from what there is now?
I remember there was a lot more marshy stuff to go out through. As we'd walk along the river, we went through little bits of sloughs and probably little feeder creeks like Jordan Creek or Dry Jordan or stuff like that in through there. And oh dear, and on the back in that big curve here at the first ranch house up the river on your left up there above Whiskey Creek.
Yeah.
There's a big hay field in there. Back over in through that area in there, there was marshy bogs and stuff along in there. There was a railroad track in there too. Maybe they had it kind of dammed up. I don't know. They had a bridge built across there though. So, but it was definitely different because river had more swings to it. And then there was, and then even then though, a lot of the river had been changed when I started going up there. Just little cutoffs where they block off part of it, but they were still, yeah. There were sloughs and cattails and frog ponds, and marshes. All those little draws that come down through there had water in them at one time, so there's bogs of little ponds of water sitting in all those places, as far up as you wanted to go.
Yeah, because I remember, that'd be 55 when I came out here, some beaver dams. Some place up there on the Grand Round towards where it split between, you know, going towards Fly Creek and the other direction towards
Tony Bay.
Tony, the experiment station.
Yeah.
Up there at Starkey, that I could never, you know, that's changed so much in there. It seemed like where the road forked, that there's, you know, the timber all through there. Now, of course, right there at Starkey, it's all open meadow.
Right.
Do you recall, as far as the timber, how much timber was in there in comparison to today, or how that had changed up?
No, I can't.
Because that was all, you know, right now it's all pretty much open, you know, it's marshland.
That's all been logged off, yeah.
Yeah, and I've forgotten trying to pinpoint exactly where it was. I remember falling in a beaver dam.
Oh, boy. I had fished through there, God, when I was about 15 years old, all the way down through there, but I don't recall timber being in there. But I'm sure there was timber, but I don't recall it as being so much. One place where I do remember beaver dams in the Grand Drum River was at this this ranch I was just telling you about, right below the mouth, between Spring Creek and Whiskey Creek. Across the river, part of the river channel ran along over the next railroad tracks, and you had the big channel out here. And there was a beaver dam back in here for that one. I do remember that one. Oh, well, then too, they had the little dams on the little tributaries. Like, when was it? Okay, 1955. Can you remember driving across the old bridge going down to Riverside Park? Then? Right down Spruce Street?
I don't think I ever. I wasn't here that long. I don't remember going across that one.
Okay.
I remember going up Hillgard, you know, that way, but not this other direction, Spruce.
Okay, when you crossed it there, the Grand Round River ran right under the main bridge, and then there was a big irrigation ditch that come down and run into that pond at the park there. Mm-hmm. There was also an island above the bridge there with a pretty good channel of water running around behind it. I remember beaver dams on that.
Oh, yeah.
Anywhere that they weren't getting washed out with floods, I believe there probably was a beaver dam if I'd have paid attention.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you see all the time, you'll never think too much about.
Yeah. Well, my greatest delight was to sneak off the river and go fishing.
What about as far as, do you remember, as far as numbers of like eel or salmon or anything else?
I can remember the river being full of eels. The Grand Round River, the Imanaha River, the Wenaha River. I remember eels in those. Oh, yeah, all the time. In the spring of the year, early summer. Well, you can see him just, and the used to have tremendous runs of suckers and squirrel mouths and chubs, different species of what we call trash fish, but there was lots and lots of them go up there. You go down there and fish for them and catch 100 of them, I guess, maybe, I don't know. Nothing to bring home to eat, yeah. Or so we thought anyway. But
do you recall the, as far as the Indians fishing or working any of the area, Art, did you ever experience any of that or see them out there?
The only time I ever saw some Indians fishing, the only time, was about 1958 or 59, and they were just above Union on Catherine Creek. Now, one time, I just recalled another time, one time, probably in 1965, there was two Indians way on up to Camp Carson, maybe they call it, on the upper Grand Ground. There was some up there. They went down below us, and they didn't even bother our hole, and they said they could see a couple of salmon in there. Obviously, there were. But when they come back, the 18 they had on their stringer they were dragging, they took two more of them out of that hole. And that was... they were cleaning the creek out at that time.
Do you know how they're fishing or what they're using?
A gig hook, had a big long pole about 18 feet long. When they came back by us where we were eating dinner there was, and that amount of fish, that was more fish than I thought was in the river. Because I wasn't seeing them all, but they sure were.
Do you remember about what size they were?
No, they were good 12 to 18 pounds. They had a couple of 18 pounders there. Most of them probably around 12, 15 pounds.
Do you remember what they were doing with them? Were they trying to prepare them, you know, up there while they were there, or how they're...
These two guys got in a pickup and went back down to Tony Bay's meadow. And when we left, we saw the same rig and maybe three or four more rigs with a lot of poles sticking out of the back of. Obviously, they'd been down, in my opinion, they were down at Tony Bay's Meadows gigging down in there too, and we never did talk to them again.
Of course, in the early days, you know, couldn't transport fast, so they're like Chasm Creek. I know talking to some of the people there, used to dry them up, you know, put them on racks and dry them while they're up there. But then, you know, once the better roads and the pickups, they could move faster.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I remember being at Salila Falls many moons ago. I could see Salila Falls before we ever got there. It looked like a black cloud. There were millions of flies. Then I was told flies won't even eat or lay their eggs on salmon meat. I don't know if that's true or not, but whatever it was, there was a bunch of them there.
Question come up about logging of cottonwoods. Do you not call anybody cutting cottonwood or what it was used for?
The only time I saw one cut up, we cut it up out at the Twidwell Sawmill at Lone Pine. I don't even know where it came from. Somebody brought it in, they cut it up, and we stacked it, and it twisted and warped and turned. It was a real beautiful wood. Later on, I was told it was a 7th-ranked hardwood cloth.
Oh, you're talking about the red tail in there, the Tony Bay's Meadow there where the Indians were you know, working that area in there. Do you recall, Art, as far as the times, you know, when you're up in that area of change or along those stream bottoms of the timber that was up in those areas?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely different now. Especially above Tony Bay's, there's trees running out in the upper end of that pasture clear across the river. Lots of trees, and I don't remember whether they just went in and cut them down or what they were. It didn't seem like they were too awfully large, but there used to be lots of trees. In the upper part of the rivers, I remember there was trees everywhere.
Remember what species?
Mostly pine.
Mostly pine along the bottoms there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you ever get into or that upper Grand Ronde where around Camp Carson country where they had done the dredging and all?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything about when that was done or
No, I don't recall any of that. Oh, okay. The time it was done.
Because original Camp Carson, of course, was way back in, you know, the 1800s.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
that. And
yeah.
They were sporadic from then on to, you know, different mining.
Golly, it looks like the person who come up with a date on that real easy. You'd
well,
think,
I picked up the dredging. I was up at the geology department there in Baker, and it was in, I always thought the dredging was way back turn of the century, but I guess it wasn't until late 30s when they're actually dredged along that river.
Yeah.
In there. So it was, you know, kind of a little surprise to me. Compared to like the granite country, a lot of that dredging was, you know, way
before,
you know,
really.
Yeah.
Well, I can remember old mine shaft right across the river and stuff. I went over there and looked in a ways.
Yeah, because you have the Indiana mine and the Rainbow mine.
Yeah.
On Torello and then Camp Carson. Of course, Camp Carson mostly hydraulic where they wash the country compared to, you know, the tunnel type of mining. And there, do you remember as far as the water quality, you know, whether it's clear or whether there's still silt coming down from that upper Grand Ronde when you're in there?
There wasn't the silt, as I recall, in my youth, what we see today.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere as close to it.
Yeah. Because, of course, the hydraulic mining, when they're doing that at turn of the century, they're washing a lot of material down the river at that time. But then, you know, they stopped that by, I think it was so early 1900s by the time that quit.
I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
I remember what the Powder River looked like out of Baker. You couldn't, I don't know how anything could possibly live in that thing, as filthy as it was. A lot of silt. I knew, were you familiar with the story of the, I think it was Billy Spears and maybe his brother were at Camp Carson?
No.
And they found a cylinder of mercury?
Oh, we don't
know. I don't know how big it was or stuff, but they, just a short time ago when I was mentioned that, they sold it to somebody. So a cylinder of mercury, however big a cylinder would be, he said it was heavier than heck.
No,
so
no.
That'd be somebody that, those kids played around with. They're 10 years younger than I am or so. But
that's a lot of mercury.
Oh, it is, yeah. And I have no idea even where they found it at. I didn't know it was at Camp Carson. That's all I know. That's all they ever said. I think they want to go back and look for more.
Do you remember as far as, of course, you had the flood here in 64, of other times when, as far as the a lot of silt coming down the Grand Ronde, of any during high water or flooding times?
Well, you know, as my youth, saying that I grew up on the river is almost the truth, because I was there from when it froze up through the good ice skating to where we had to chop holes in the ice to get the snow wet where it would freeze over and have ice skating again. And the only time I really paid much attention to rivers during the ice out, or just it went out, and then it would be high and stuff. But I don't remember any flash floods and stuff like that. There could have been, but I don't remember any of that kind of stuff. I remember the one that came down up here, how many ever years ago was 15 or so, that really a bad one come off the burn this side of Anthony Lakes.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what year that was, but that was a horrible. Yeah, I think it killed everything in the river pretty near.
Yeah.
If it didn't, it could have. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a kid, kids are more foolish than I think. I would drink water anywhere.
Well, that's it. When we're forcers, you used to drink out all the creeks. I mean, they were paying attention to it. You know?
Now they even put signs up Blue Hills Canyon, don't drink this water. Oh, dear.
Remember a few contracts I drank out, I'd be so thirsty. You know?
It didn't bother me if I could skim the side if I didn't see any little creatures in there.
Well, that's it, Do you recall, as far as out in the valley, any other flooding or any change high water? Like I said, 64 was the big one, 65 where it flooded a good
I remember many years before that, I'm going to say back, 45 or somewhere along there, they had the big flood over out of Catherine Creek. And
it was 48, I think, was the big one that went right down through town there and flooded, you know, a lot of
And then that's when they started diking up all the bridges and or roads out here in the valley or along Catherine Creek down through there. I remember that. Mm-hmm. The real changes I've seen in the Grand Ronde Valley is the farming practices where they push the trees in the slough, and then pretty soon they push the dirt in the slough and of the Grand Ronde Rivers what it amounts to, and made their farmland more profitable for them. I would assume that was the main reason.
Yeah, because some of the aerial photos, you can see, you know, some of the old sloughs where you still see the remnants of them, but there's no slough anymore. They're, you know, completely filled them in.
That's right. You can see that between here and Pierce Lane, mm-hmm. and not through there. Well, in fact, all those places out there is where we used to go catfishing in the spring of the year, and everywhere you went, there was.
Some of those sloughs are, do you know when those were, whether they were natural or they were constructed on some of these, there's the Geckler Slough and, you know, some of the others go out through the valley there, in addition, besides the Grand Ronde area?
The ones I'm thinking about, I think they were all natural because it was solid brush and trees on them and stuff. I don't remember too much off of cottonwood, but I remember a lot of box elder and willow type brush. And
do you recall anything about the Davis Dam as early as you can remember of those were in there? I haven't seen any dates exactly when that was, the Davis Dam, you know, was actually constructed.
I can't tell you when it was first constructed, but in 1946, I'm pretty sure it was there, because I was about 12 years old the first time I went out Davis Dam salmon fishing. And they've been there ever since, as far as I know.
Yeah.
I really couldn't tell you exactly what year it was, but it was somewhere in the late, real late 40s there. Might have been 48.
Was it, I've never been out there. Is that where the salmon could get through there pretty well upstream, or?
Yeah, they had a fish ladder in it. There's two dams. There's an upper dam and a lower dam. The lower dam is a new one compared to the ones that I was just referring to, though. Mm-hmm. The old one, it had a poor fish passage as I know it today, but I would see fish using it. What I saw most of the fish doing, they'd jump and they could hit that water and disappear and swim right on up through that.
Yeah,
so they got a lot of power when they want to move.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I didn't, like I said, never been there. I was just wondering as far as the, you know, the passage of salmon, if that posed much problem, or how high that dam was, because I've never been in there. Whether that's changed up or it's still, you know, about the same.
I think it's still about the same. It may be a little bit higher, but I'm going to guess it was maybe 10 foot tall. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't always have it boarded up that much with water.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that high where it come over the 8 foot, maybe. The structure of the dam itself is higher than that, but that was, they
the
had
water
the poles and stuff,
yeah.
They had to have pulleys to put their boards in there and lock it off. Uh-huh. Obviously would be a detrimental to have to go through those fish ladders and stuff. It wasn't the best design anyway, but they did have one in there, because I can remember from those years right through there, way on up into the, I think maybe 1965 was probably the last good run of salmon I remember seeing on Catherine Creek, somewhere along that period of time.
Yeah, because I know I got out of the Army in 59, and shortly thereafter, I think it's probably around 60, there's still a good run, you know, even though the high water, you had a lot of silt coming down every year, you know, down to Catherine, you still had a lot of salmon in there.
Oh, yeah.
At that time.
Mm. Eagle Creek, all those creeks.
Oh, yeah.
We all had fish in them.
But as far as in your experience, in about the mid-60s, about the last, you know, heavy runs that you can recall or you remember?
I might be a little bit ahead. It may have been 1970, mm-hmm. but let's late 60s and early 70s. You know, I hear all these things about logging and roads and farming and everything else being the trouble and stuff, but we don't hear quite, we are hearing now quite a bit of mention about the hydropower dams mm-hmm. on the Columbia and Snake River. And I, as the years went by, as they built the dams, I saw the fishing runs mm-hmm. diminishing. Definitely, there's no yeah. doubt about it. In my mind, that was the biggest culprit of them all. Mm-hmm. But I did not condone the logging practices. I don't like clear cutting and fine country, and I don't like all the trees cut down and land cleared. That's just my own personal thing. But
it's a heavy, tremendous impact. And that whole thing is so complex with water holding capacity and snow holding, and of course, capacity of the vegetation to hold soils back.
That's something that I think is lacking mm-hmm. one heck of a lot. I don't know how these people can stand to even live on a creek and go out there and let the cattle chew it all down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, it's disgusting. it doesn't have to be that way.
Well, that's it. Yeah,
it's detrimental to their sub-irrigation they get out of the creek and everything else.
Yeah, right? A lot of times I don't think they really realize the ramifications of a lot of those things that are happening. It's like the clear cutting, of course, is a real easy, cheap way to do it so that it's...
That's really going to get your mush face there pretty quick.
I think that's gets me pretty well filled in on all things that, like I said, it's like a big puzzle trying to put all the pieces together.
You know that in, 1952, the spring of 1952, Jim Twidwell and I and a couple of the guys were logging up Whiskey Creek. And I hate to say this because it's sickening as I can see it right now. We drove the cats and the logging truck up and down Whiskey Creek mm-hmm. for
a couple of
miles. And I think they did that everywhere.
Well, it was. I remember when I came back in 1960, we were managing all the forest over there and Union District mm-hmm. and all the sales, and that's where they started really cracking down that cats are going down the draws. And I mean, that's the easy way to do it. You pull everything in the draw and go right down the draw, and that's where start really saying, hey, this is not acceptable. It's just a constant fight to try change the practices at that time.
That's true. Many years ago, I was up hunting on Long Ridge, back up here on the headwaters of Five Points Creek, and I came in and walked up to a flume coming off of Long Ridge going down into Five Points Creek. And I remember Uncle Harry talking about logging up there on top of that ridge. Apparently they logged them out and then decked them and then put them in that flume and shot them down into Five Points Creek so they could get higher. They got them on down the creek. I don't think there's enough water in there to float them, but I'll bet Nicholas things are still standing. There was two of them that I went by. God, they were huge logs, great big. Well, they weren't the whole log, they were slabbed off where they got that thick, rounded underneath there like that, and another one going up at an angle on each side. Oh man, it's elaborate. They put in a lot of work trying to.
Do you know about when that would have been done?
Oh golly, I wish I could answer that for you. Oh.
Or just roughly.
Yeah. That's 1350. God, maybe it was 70 years ago. Or maybe even more than that.
The 20th or turn of the century.
Yeah, it could have been. Somewhere here I had if you have any questions, just go ahead while I'm trying to look. I had a picture of my Uncle Harry's car that he had when they lived next door. They had it in the place here. Oh, I didn't see it here at the moment. I think that I was around 50. It was probably around 1950 or so when Dad moved into this house over here, which was my Uncle Harry's house. He was the one that logged up in there, so it got it had been way before that. He was an old man then, so I'd say probably the turn of the century. It couldn't have been. It would have been later than that. At least I think Stang started this sawmill in 26 over here, didn't he?
Yeah, the Mount Emily started in 26.
Well,
I think they started building the year before, but I think the first log was cut, if I remember, in November 26, I believe.
Okay. There, they used to have a saw over here on the to split the big pine logs that come in on the rail cars before they dump them in the pond so they could handle them in the mill. And as I remember, Ann Ina's telling me that they cut those and then hauled them up on the railroad line up to the right at Five Points Creek to Camp 1 on Five Points, and they, the teams and stuff, they got them on up on the hill and built those flumes. So maybe it was in the late 20s that this was being done, which would be feasible.
You know, to see Mount Emily, they started, major operation there in 26 when they bought out the Grand Rod Lumber Company holdings. Mm-hmm. And then they went clear through, if you recall, when they shut down the railroad logging, I think 55, mm-hmm. that I just vaguely remember, I think the shays are still parked up here at Hillgard when I came out here. I've had people say that wasn't right, but
I think you are right.
I sure recall seeing those things. I never took a picture of them, though.
What was it you saw stacked up there along the...
The two Shea engines.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure it was still there in 55, that summer.
Shays.
I
remember them sitting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody told me here a while back they were gone by that time, but I said, boy, I don't think I was fantasizing.
I don't think you were. I was told, and I'm not even sure of this, that one of those... What about that old engine sitting over at Walla Walla?
I don't know where that came from.
That wasn't one of...
I don't think so. I think these went out someplace else. You know, the 2 year. I may be wrong, though, Art, on that. But I'm talking James Hoover out there at Imbler the other day, and he said, I guess Bruce Moorhead, with Mount Emily, that had a chance to get one of those engines and put down here in the park, and the city council refused.
Oh, dear.
It wasn't going to cost them anything at all. What a treasure.
It would have been.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something to have?
Yeah, he's willing to, he had it all arranged to bring him down, bring one of them down here and park the thing, and they thought it was a hazard of, the kids playing out or whatever.
Yep. I remember also in 1955 and 56, there was a fellow over in the mill by the name of Ralph Coates that worked up there. He was a fireman on that engine. I said, that thing derailed a lot. And he said, all the time. I said, how'd you get it back on the tracks? He said, drove it back on. All those drivers and stuff, they'd get in there and they'd get some track laid out there for it to get up on it.
Pull their way right up on it.
All the times, I said. It must have happened a lot. He told me some good experiences when he was real young about being out there at 15 years old with a pike pole, I think on the Minam River and the Grand Round, turning the logs off the riffles out there on their log floats or drives, whatever they call those.
I had one picture there where they're taking the horses and pulling them off, the shoals there, off those sandbars in the middle there.
That was coming down to
Perry. Yeah, it was up on the, someplace on the looked like it's pretty open, probably just above Hillgard there, the way, looking at the pictures. Traced that down, exact location, but it just the background, we had those bare ridges up behind.
That's right.
And it looks like it's up there, around, was that?
I remember.
Creek, through there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was. Have you ever noticed the old dam on Minam? The budding is still there, just before
I was thinking the footing's still there, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
You can see where it's banked up on the other side, right across the river from just where you get to Minam down there a little ways. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall anything about, because they had the splash dam that was way up the Minam, of when that might have been put in?
I have no idea about that. I don't even know what a splash dam would be for.
Well, evidently they logged up the Minam. And again, just like the Grand Round, to float those logs down there, that they contained the water and then turned it loose.
Oh, that's what it was purposeful, just to give it that
scoot the water down, because that's the way they did.
Well, I'm glad to know that, because that'd be a hell of a long wait for that much rain to float the logs with it.
Well, you have your snow melt all the time, because up there in the Perry country, that's where you see there's five splash dams all together. One right at the mouth of Tony Bay Meadow, right? And you still see.
Okay, I remember that. I remember that.
And that's still in there. And then there are remnants of it with all the rock. And then there's one in the mouth, or towards the mouth of Fly Creek, where it comes into the Grand Rock. another one up Meadow Creek and up Dark Canyon, and then someplace around the mouth of Beaver Creek where they used to pond that water. And then read the other day where they would they wouldn't let the whole thing out. They'd let enough water out with the spring melt where they had about, maybe 8-10 feet of water going down that river, and kick the logs in. And then the next day they do the same thing all over again until they had that drive finished where they had all those logs piled along the river, and then start pushing them in the river and scooping them on down to Perry. So it was quite an operation. But they were timing that as, I guess, from April through June of whenever that snow melt, they try to work there over a couple months period to all that timber. But they were cutting about 20 million feet a year coming down at Perry there. So there's a lot of
They cut a lot of timber, you betcha. Big ones too.
Oh yeah. But it went from there, progressed from there to where they started doing the railroad logging. And then, and still bringing up, using horse to skid with, and then eventually the tractors came in, I think about 1925 was the first use of the tractor. They're skidding down, where it's better ground, and we're taking it from the horses and down to the deck and like
that. That's so
everything kind of progressed from the mechanical age.
Oh yeah, industrial revolution.
Yeah. Same way the trucks they first started using, had a picture of Mount Emily, I think 1932 when they had the fake fleet of trucks was the first big thing that they started converting them to using that.
Well, I can remember when they did away with that sawmill. I never saw so many I never saw so many logging trucks in my life. I mean, there's some, they backed her up Jackson, Vaughn, Bass, Kins, Grocery Cliff railroad tracks practically. Oh, it was really something. And that was just one mill.
Yeah. Do you recall anything about the Bowman Hicks mill? You were talking a little bit between that and the Palmer out here at the fairgrounds.
No, I can't recall anything of it. The only thing I can recall about, which one went to Pondosa? Bowman Hicks?
No, that was the Grand Round.
Grand Round.
Up in Perry.
I did go in that mill one time and when I was 17 years old, just for a little while, and watched him working in there. And it was really something to look at. My first time in a big mill. I thought it was a big mill. It was a pretty big mill.
Yeah, well, I guess apparently they had two bandsaws there, and it was pretty good. I mean, you look at the pictures of all the installation they had.
Oh, yes.
The three ice houses and all the...
It was an operation.
Yeah,
no doubt
real
about
operation.
It, you betcha.
There was a planer mill up there, too, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe now it'll be a golf course. Huh?
Yeah, there's. I guess figured out next year. I guess that they're
still working
at
it.
Yeah. As they're talking about going ahead with it. So.
Yeah. Kind of off the subject a little bit, but the railroad line that used to come in, go right along the pond over here, delivered logs to the pond, also went right straight out across X Avenue and made a turn like that and went in over to the sugar beet factory. Were you aware of that?
Uh-huh. No, I knew the sugar beet factory is in here. I didn't know location or that the railroad, went to it.
The railroad went to it. Okay. And Dad's original deed to the property over there, there was a picture of it, and it showed the line going over. It showed the sugar beet factory. Mm-hmm. You know where the factory is now, don't you?
No, I don't.
It's at Brewing Company over on Z Avenue.
Oh, that's...
Bush Brewing Company. There was one there, and then another one across the street. There was another building over there.
Uh-huh. I never did know exactly. I'd seen pictures of the sugar beet factory, but I never knew the exact location.
It's still there. The old people call it the county shop, but hell, it's the sugar beet factory. It was really something. And now I understand that maybe sugar beets are... Maybe they will raise them here this time.
Well, I've seen a few trucks going through the valley there where I think there's... seemed like somebody, I think that's what they were.
I've seen some big piles of them out there after they get them harvested up out of the ground. They put them in big, huge piles out there. But I heard a couple guys at the mill talk and said they understood there was going to be several thousand more acres of them put in. So
get some diversification of crops out there. Well, I think that, sure appreciate the time here.
You're
filled me in
more than welcome. Sometime if you'd like to go for a ride up Fox Hill, we'll go for a ride.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's the head of one of the rock creeks up here, the East Fork, the Rock Creek, whatever it is in there, just right up here, up top of Ladd Canyon. And they'd been in there with a cat, and they'd run back and forth over this ridge, knocking down all the lodgepole and everything that I could see except for the big dead snags. And then they'd leave a little strip of trees through there.
Yeah, they're just stripped, kind of like...
They didn't log them, they just knocked them
down. No, they just stripped them through there just to open that up. Only trouble with that lodgepole, at least up on the other side, I never got on this. I flew this and got pictures of it when they were doing that. But the... on the other side there, the Indian Creek country, Clark Creek country, through there, I'd board tree after tree, through all those stands. And all that lodgepole was about 120 years old. And it grew real fast till it was about 38 years old. And then it just tightens right up because of all your trees on those dog hair thickets. But the bugs are hitting them. And everybody, again, is talking about, well, you can't grow lodgepole over 60, years of age. And I said, hey, you get out in the ground and look at, actually study that. You could see what, if you thinned it and kept it going, you could probably do pretty good.
I've seen big lodgepoles right here.
Oh, yeah, up in
California, they're that big.
Yeah, around here, I think 26 inches is the biggest one we measured up there in Indian Creek when we were making those sales.
Wow, that would have been an old tree, would
it? I never saw the, as far as after it's cut, I never measured that one, of what the age was. But it was evidently, it opened up where, just fast growing. And that thing was mixed in with all, the other species in there. But here's a 26-inch lodgepole.
That's a big tree.
It was. That's real surprising.
Well, on this area where they're going in and knocking down those trees and open the area up, were they hoping to get... or just trying to see if different species would come back through that area?
I think it was more just thinking that, open it up so you get the growth and the bugs wouldn't hit it. But I don't know.
But sure didn't work, did it?
I doubt it because of the age. Like I said, I never got on the ground to know how old those trees were. But it never did back. So, it was one of those things that would be interesting to go back and just see what's happened, since that time to track it out. So, but they covered, worked a lot of acres up there. Because I remember, like I said, I was doing a lot of aerial photography at that time, just trying to track those insects and what the impact was and that. And so I remember photographing that. I still got that files in those areas, but there's a lot of acres. I know they were important.
I just glanced at something here. It says, fishing methods on Grand Round. I never did get to see it done myself, but they take a stovepipe about that long, put a glass in it, called it a peep glass, and they'd look underneath the edge of the bank, then reach back underneath those banks and gig salmon up, aren't you? Below Davis Dam out there.
Oh, yeah.
It was legal at that time to do it. Do you know, are you familiar with Glenn Herford?
I think you'd mentioned.
I had.
I know.
He is a walking dictionary, honest to God. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he has in pictures, but all he's ever done is played. He's married a woman who's wealthy and stuff, so he got to do a lot of things and traveled all over probably fished every creek in Oregon and everything that's ever been possible to do.
He'd sure give him a call.
He'd sure be a great one to...
Oh, good. Appreciate it.
He would... He knows. He's really sharp.
Like I said, it's been kind of a challenge to find people still around that experience this and still know or have pictures.
That's what I'm hoping, that maybe he'd have pictures. Yeah. Because I didn't actually start taking pictures until after I had my family started. So.
But I'll just leave that with you, so if there's anything that comes up.
Are you interested in anybody else, maybe, that would...
Oh, sure. If there's anybody you can think of, I've lost a few good ones that passed away this last year. There's some in nursing homes now.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't remember, unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to... That fellow I used to work with in the mill, he used to be the fireman on the engine for Augie Stang. Mm-hmm. His name was Ralph Coates, and his daughter married Jack Cochran, who was the son of Cliff Cochran, and Cliff and Jack are still alive. And well, Jack's a couple years younger than I am. And I would be willing to bet that his wife has probably got, Jack Cochran's wife probably got some pictures of what was going on out in the upper river up there.
Are they living in LeGrand?
Cliff lives in LeGrand. He lives up on Inn. And Jack may live in Tri-Cities. I see him in town quite a bit. Well, his dad's getting pretty old, so he comes over quite often, I think. Ralph Coates. God, I bet there's some terrific pictures there. After his wife died, he married Matilda Chauches. Which takes you right back up the Grand Round River again.